Hello, welcome to another Pharmacy in Practice podcast. Very good friend and colleague on this morning. An editorial board member, Pharmacy in Practice editorial board member. Very exciting. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, nice to speak to you, Johnny. My name is Francesca Owen. I'm a pharmacist consultant, empowerment and resilience coach, and I run my own consultancy business for care services.
Very good. Well, it's great to have you on. Now, I have a vote of thanks to make to you. No one sees all the emails in the background that go to my editorial board when I'm urgently needing advice at like 11:30 on a Saturday night before I publish something. So you're always there, and you always reply really promptly. So thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
So let's just start with your background, Francesca. Where what's in the words of Roy Walker, was it? What's your name and where do you come from?
I'm from Coatbridge. I grew up in Coatbridge and a beautiful part of the west of Scotland. Became a pharmacist, I guess, very much by default. And it's something that it's interesting. I've never really felt pharmacy's been quite the right fit for me, but I've kind of made it fit for me. I started working in pharmacy as a student in Boots in Coatbridge. I worked there Saturdays and summers, and then I did my pre-med with Boots in Kirkintilloch. And when I qualified, I started working with Boots in kind of West End of Glasgow. But very quickly, kind of identified that it wasn't quite the right fit for me. Didn't really know what I wanted to do, but I thought it wasn't really working out for me there. And I decided I would locum for a while I figured out, what it was that I wanted to do. And really through that, I got involved in lots of different things, doing some audit with NHS GDC. I worked did a bit of the kind of early prescribing support stuff with Richard Lowry and Alistair McLaren back in the day, almost 20 years ago. And then in 2005, I started working I got a job in old age psychiatry, which for me was just it was lovely. It was a great job. I loved that job, working with consultant psychiatrists, being really part of the MDT, and I did that for several years. And it was a great post, but things change as they do. And when that role kind of changed and there wasn't so much involvement with the clinical team, I got the job as care home pharmacist in Lanarkshire. And I was in that post for 4 years. 4 years. So for me, it was really the opportunity to create, working in dementia services, I could really see the issues that there were out in care homes and a lot of the issues they were having in terms of medicines. So I went for that job, I got it, and developed a service within Lanarkshire, which was award winning. We got awards for our independent prescribing service to care homes, and that's still running in Lanarkshire as far as I'm aware. That was great until I kind of realised there wasn't really anywhere for me to go within that that I wanted to go. I think if I wanted to sort of progress within my career, it was had to be going down a sort of kind of management senior post, and not really there wasn't really anything out there that was some that really kind of floated my boat, I guess. So in 2016, I decided I was gonna leave the NHS, take a jump into the unknown, and I set up my own consultancy practice for care services, which I've been running ever since. While I was sort of early days of that, I was also working and doing some sessions in GP practice as a prescriber for care homes, which was really good. Fairly stressful, but enjoyed it. I love the patient contact, and that was really important to me. So now I'm just running my, I say I'm just, I'm running my consultancy business. 2018, my family and I, we moved out to from Glasgow to Andorra for an adventure, and I run my business remotely most of the time, travel as much as I need to, and that's been a fantastic experience for us, and it's working really well. It's busy, it's challenging from at times, but but really good fun. So the consultancy side of my practice is really good.
Are you happier now?
Yes, absolutely.
That kind of implies that you were unhappy before. I'm not saying that, but do
I don't think I
you
was
know, just.
unhappy. I think I was probably always a bit dissatisfied, I guess. There was always something more. I can see there was also always something more. And I think for me, I like to be constantly challenged. I like to be constantly learning. And I've done a lot of kind of work over the years on coaching and mindset, on resilience and all sorts of things. That I think got me through a lot of the more challenging things, and perhaps I stayed places where I maybe wasn't as satisfied longer than I should have. But now I think I'm really doing what I want to be doing. I've got flexibility in terms of how I run my business, what I do in my day. I only do the jobs that I like to do. I know I'm really lucky in that respect. I've always enjoyed the jobs that I've done, but there have always been parts that I really would rather someone else had done for me. But yeah, I think that flexibility, that ability, the diversity of what I'm doing, that just it really keeps me going. There is never a dull day in terms of what I'm doing. And I guess the fact that I've managed to make a success of this makes me really proud every day as well. I think that it's been a challenge. It's been hard work. I think a lot of our friends think that we just up and left the country, but we as a family created a situation where my husband and I both had businesses that we could operate remotely, we could travel as we needed to, and that took time, but we got to a point where we were able to do that, and it's been great. And I think the pace of life for me is it's busy, but it's not busy in a way that drains me as perhaps did before. And I think often, when we have so many demands on us, in our work life and in our family lives, and often you kind of get home at night and you've just been running at 100 miles an hour, dealing with other people's agendas all day, and then that time for yourself is not quality time because you're exhausted, and I think it's good to be. It's good to be tired from doing things that are really, making you feel good. But so often, I think it can be difficult to find that balance sometimes in a kind of, certainly for me, in an employed role, I think. And we've talked about this, that it's not for everybody. It's not for everybody, but for me, it really works. And I have to work extremely hard to keep my business going, but that's good. That's okay. So.
No, me too. We've kind of jumped the employment ship, roughly at the same time, within a few years of each other. But no, I totally get it, and it probably isn't. It probably wouldn't suit everyone, and I'm sure some folk do make the jump and kind of end up going back. But I don't think I ever will, to be honest.
No, human both.
And what was the like? I'm delving a bit, but what was the itch you needed to scratch in terms of going self-employed and doing your own thing?
I think I guess particularly when I think back to the care homes role, when I started in that role, it was a blank sheet of paper, and I was basically given that piece of paper. What do we need to do here? How do we develop this? And how do we take that forward? And having that freedom to create something was really exciting. And I think that's when I kind of got the bug for doing that, and really having that freedom, and just having to sell ideas to people. Really, I felt this is it was really empowering. It was a really positive experience, and I got a huge amount out of doing that. And I think as things change and you've got restrictions and politics and all sorts of things that you're dealing with the NHS, and I guess I felt that it stagnated, and it was really difficult to take that forward any further. you know, without additional funding and things. And really, I reflected back to why did I love this 3 years ago? And what isn't there anymore that I loved about it? And reflecting on that and really thinking about, you know, my values and how what needs to sit comfortably with me. But also the fact that, you know, I guess I'm ambitious. I want to keep progressing. I want to keep doing that. And it's not about just, you know, working my way up the ladder, but it's actually about continually achieving something.
Yeah.
So those things I thought, you know, I could stay and I could try and push this forward as best I can, or I can actually look at the issues that I know need to be dealt with and what the option, what the practicalities are in terms of care services paying for that themselves, because I knew there was a market out there for it. They were crying out for support, but as one person supporting 90 care homes, I couldn't do anything very well within that setting. So really that ability then to sort of transfer the learning that I'd had from that role and take that out and really support businesses really well is it's been great. It's been really good. So yeah, it was really that I push it forward, keep moving and keep achieving, keep creating, keep doing what needs to be done. And seeing the outcomes of that at the other side. And that's always been the thing in pharmacy that's really you know, it's that making things better for people, helping to make
Yeah.
people better. That's what it's all about. So,
I think what if I may say, I think what you're doing is meaningful work. And I always think that's a really good place to start, actually, if you're you know, if you're doing something that means something, and is positive, then good things will happen, and you know, your business will do well. That's what I see in you and what you're trying to do. I think in terms of your coaching stuff, I think, to be honest, I think you'll be inundated. I know we're coming on to speak about the state of pharmacy and what's happening and stuff, and how pharmacists will feel within that, all that change that's going on. But you know, I don't think there's ever been a time really when being able to talk to someone and have coaching and, you know, either a kick in the backside or an arm around the shoulder, or probably a combination of both, would be so important. So you know, I wish you all the best with that.
Thank
And
you.
you mentioned like something I can identify with, Francesca, is freedom. When, and I know sometimes you have to sort of, when you're employed, you have to put your head down and just do the job. You know, you just have to suck it up sometimes, especially early in your career. But I can identify with when you've had enough of that, to be honest, and you want to, sounds very, I don't know what the word is, but sort of create your own reality, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think, you know, it's not for everyone. I know it,
No.
and it's interesting. I've had a lot of coaching conversations recently with some pharmacists and some not. And I think it really interests me the variety of things that really are what people, how people want to go forward in their lives, you know, because I think I have spoken to lots of people who look at what I do and think that, oh, that looks nice, and you live in the mountains, and you can go skiing in the mornings if you want to, and you can do all these things. I said, yeah, well, I can go skiing in the mornings, but that means then I'm working till 10 o'clock at night on my business. So
Exactly.
that's a choice that I make, and it's lovely to have that choice, but I think the reality of it for people sometimes it just looks like on the face of it that it, or that it looks like a really lovely, you know, pretty lifestyle. It is, but I work hard to make my business a success. It has to be a success, otherwise I can't live here. So I have to come back and get a job.
Exactly. Well, that's the thing about business. If you do nothing, nothing happens. You know, and
yeah,
you're
that's it.
sitting
I could,
twiddling
you
your
know, I
thumbs.
I could spend my days in the mountains. That would be wonderful. But I'd very quickly not be able to feed my family.
Exactly. I don't know what you think, but one of the things that I've found, being self-employed, is that I didn't get when I was employed, was, especially as a pharmacist, is professional autonomy. You know, I just think, I wish our profession, and maybe it's coming with the proliferation of independent prescribing and stuff, but the level of autonomy is very low, really. And decisions in pharmacy are made by, at all levels, are made by a small number of people. And I think that, personally, I think that triangle needs to be upturned, and the power. Or people, pharmacists at the who are working in practice should be empowered again, really. So I want to ask you about your care home stuff. What did that role involve?
The NHS role.
Yeah.
So, I mean, effectively, as I said, it could have involved whatever I deemed was practical. As I think, I personally feel I've had a lot of professional autonomy over the years. I've had some really fantastic managers who have, I guess, trusted me to take. To take my role in whatever direction it needed to be. I think I earned that trust certainly, but I really have to say I rate all the managers that I've had over the years. I don't think I've had a bad one. In terms of the care homes role, it started out really looking at what are the issues within care home settings. What are the problems in terms of medicines provision, medicine safety. Medicines waste. What are the issues there? So I did a lot of work looking at sort of creating guidelines, creating structure, kind of SOPs almost for people to work towards to try and improve safety within that setting, so that the people living in care homes were going to get their medicine safely, effectively, and hopefully be better as a result of that. But also what I quickly identified was that despite, I mean, within Lanarkshire at the time we had a local enhanced service where GP practices were involved working within care homes, and part of that was to do medication review. But the reality of the pressures on the GPs when they were visiting the care homes on a weekly or twice weekly basis, such that actually doing an effective medication review was not practical. People were having medication reviews done, but actually, within the time that they had to do that, there was no way that you're going to get anything really, really that digs really deep and actually gets to the nub of what changes we can make. Because that takes time. You need to kind of understand the issues your patients had, where they're at now, what they're doing. So, what's causing them problems, what's not. And so, started out doing medication reviews and kind of just really learning about that process and that environment and the best way to deal with that. And at that point, I wasn't qualified as a prescriber at that point. And the reality was that to do anything in a timely fashion and make changes for your patient, we need to be doing that as a prescriber.
Yeah.
So we set up a service with sessional pharmacists, independent prescribers coming in and doing half a day a week. And allocating them out to, it was a small number of care homes within the cohort that I had responsibility for. But building from them just sort of working in partnership with the GPs to actually taking ownership of that, taking having that patient caseload that they were responsible for, managing their medication, making the changes to medication where they're competent to do so, but very much working in partnership in the practice with the right person within the practice. And with patients' families and also the staff within the care homes as well, and the patients themselves to get the right outcome for people. So that was, and that's a, we won a Scottish Pharmacist Award for that a couple of years back, because it really was. I mean, it was really successful. It was a really positive experience. The feedback from patients, from the patients' families, from care staff, from the GP practices was that we were really making a big difference for people, and you could see it. And as soon as I qualified as a prescriber, I was out there doing it as a prescriber as well. And it was, we talked about meaningful work but it was one of the most fulfilling things is to see somebody, as particularly, start to take away sedative medication, that kind of thing. You see that the next week somebody's feeding themselves, or you get feedback from staff that, oh, they can feed
Yeah.
themselves now, or they're able to get up out of their chair now. I mean, it's really just hugely improving people's quality of life through very small changes. but changes that people can be scared to make in case of what happens, or what happens if. But I always have the sort of mindset of what happens if we leave it, so we have to kind of balance that. But so that was fantastic. That was a really, really great service, and I loved being a part of that, and I remained a part of that even after I left, just doing some sessions, just to kind of keep involved with that, keep that patient contact, which was really positive. So, but very much a lot of it was about process, but and training, and getting people to understand what the issues are and why they are issues, because there's so much in terms of care staff. Numbers of nurses within care homes are reducing all the time because they can't recruit. So we have carers who are being upskilled and do a really, really good job, but there's so much that they don't know what they don't know, and that's where the problems happen. So I see it as my job now to help them with that, and to sort of improve process, and I work really closely with several care homes to do that, and then I do a huge amount of training within that as well.
Can you remember? You'll probably not remember your very first prescription because I can't. I think I probably can't actually. It was probably a spacer, which is very unexciting. But can you remember how it felt to write those first prescriptions?
Well, it's a kind of funny thing because I will tell you now, I've never signed a prescription. And the reason I've never actually signed a prescription is because the changes that I was making were, because of the way things were operating care homes, you because of the monthly cycle and things, you don't want to cause too many problems. And the reality of things is I was more often stopping things than starting them. So yeah, that bit, I never had my own prescription pad. There were a lot of political reasons for that as well, but we'll not go into that. But I was obviously then making changes within Vision, as we use in Lanarkshire, and then taking responsibility for those changes as a prescriber, which is fine. But I do remember the first change that I made, and I was stopping an antipsychotic for a patient who was on a really low dose. And I, having worked in dementia services for so long, this was my bread and butter. And so many of my colleagues were like, "Oh my goodness, we can't touch antipsychotics." I'm like, actually, we must touch the antipsychotics if it's appropriate. And stopping that antipsychotic, I knew it was the very best thing to do for this person, and it was so empowering to be able to do that myself. Just to say, right, okay, I can take that away. We're going to stop it. I'm going to see you next week. You obviously, I give the care staff, lots of information about what to look for, what to do if there's a problem, all that kind of stuff. But just in that moment, knowing, and I did, and it did, it made a huge difference for the person who was falling. And I just remember thinking, yeah, this is why I did that prescribing course that took out of me last year, because it was empowering just to be able to make that change. However,
Yeah, no, I you mentioned the politics, and let's not alienate the entire pharmacy political establishment here, but yeah, I had similar issues, especially working in community pharmacy. I think there's a great suspicion. But I think back when we were starting out, sort of like 5, 6 years ago, or whatever it was, the politics are different now, and there's certainly, in fact, if anything, it's gone the other way, which we'll maybe come on to talk about. I mean, what do you think about the rush? I keep calling it the promised land of general practice, you know. There seems to be a tremendous pressure and rush to get every pharmacist in the country prescribing and working in general practice. What's your thoughts?
I think it is a positive thing. I think having pharmacists within that setting and operating at, the top of the license within that setting, within their competence is fantastic. I think there has been a huge investment in it, and I'll be honest and say I think it has been too much too fast. I think we don't necessarily have the structures in place to support the numbers of pharmacists that are going out and working GP practice as much as they need to be supported. I think coming from community pharmacy straight into a GP practice setting, I remember the first session I did with prescribing support in Glasgow, and it was a day a week. And I mean, we had a huge amount of training before we were let out into practice. We weren't operating as prescribers, and I went out and And I'll name names, but I spent the day with Noreen Downes from GGC, who is a wonderful pharmacist. And I now look at Noreen and I think, yeah, I she is so experienced, but I just remember spending that day with her going, I'm never going to be able to do what you can do because I could, despite the training. And I'll be absolutely honest here. I sat in the car park that night and I cried and I phoned my husband. It wasn't my husband at the time. I phoned. I said, I don't think I can do this. I don't think I can do this. I can't operate at that level. And the reality was, with all the training and support, and then further conversations, particularly with Noreen, who's hugely supportive and a real, help to. Over the years has been a real help to me in many ways and different roles I've done. I kind of got to a point where I was confident to do what I needed to do, but it strikes me that there are a lot of pharmacists coming, particularly coming directly from a community setting into that, and it's a completely different way of working. And sometimes the expectations of what they'll do isn't clear for them. Some are in really supportive environments and really flying, and that's fantastic. And then there are others that are perhaps not. What the boundaries of what they will do hasn't been clear from the start, and they're maybe being asked to do things they're not comfortable with, and how they manage that is difficult. I think NEST do a great job with in terms of the boot camps. I'm obviously involved with those, so I'm slightly biased on that. There's a lot of information within there, but it isn't enough. There's a huge amount of learning, and I think the biggest thing, and we've talked about this before, for me is the resilience of the pharmacist within there, within that setting, and actually trying to develop that resilience, whether it's just working in a really busy environment. As community pharmacists, we're very used to working in busy environments, but it's different. Kind of in the dynamics within the practice, trying to figure all that stuff out, trying to find your way through it, trying to push back work that actually isn't within your remit or your competence, or deal with that, or find ways to develop your competence. All these things are challenging. And then you start making mistakes. And we will make mistakes. And this is the biggest challenge, I think, for pharmacists working in a GP practice. And I've said this many times, and I don't see it. I'm not sure how we develop the resilience that, by the time you become a GP, you have been through years and years and years of training, making mistakes, learning to learn from those mistakes, deal with the mistakes, and move forward. And we don't have that within pharmacy. And I think that probably needs to look right back to, the degree, pre-reg, all that sort of thing, and try and build that stuff in there, because I think we are, as a profession, are much, perhaps it's not that we're much harder on ourselves. I'm sure that GPs, when they make mistakes, don't take it lightly at all. I wouldn't suggest that for a moment. But I think that we don't necessarily have the skill set to deal with that. And we're kind of flying in a level where we're operating at a much higher level than perhaps we're used to or equipped to, and we need to know how to deal with it when we're working out of our depth, and not find ourselves in situations that we're not comfortable with, or that are we're going to end up making mistakes because we're overwhelmed or swamped or whatever it is. But it's for me, I mean, I make mistakes. We do make mistakes. So that's we are all human and we will make mistakes. But I know when I made mistakes as a prescriber, small as they were, and caught as they were before there was any harm done. Oh my goodness, I was so hard on myself. And I think we've all had times when that's happened, and how we move forward from that, and how we learn from it and move forward from that. It's really important that we have a skill set to deal with that. And I think it feels different than it did as a non-prescriber,
Yeah, oh, definitely. No, I totally agree with all of what you're saying, and I think it's just about having a moderate, balanced view of this thing. But there's so much within what you just said, the whole supervision thing. And if, well, I could probably boil it down to the precedent that exists in medicine. Like you mentioned, the GP's pathway. It's probably the most sort of similar thing out there, really. But I benefited from working in a training practice for almost 3 years. The difference in culture is staggering. And at the risk of really oversimplifying the problem, I actually think a lot of it comes down to money. The amount of money invested in a trainee GP to get them up to a level of competence that's acceptable is absolutely colossal. There's some stuff within that as well. So they're supervised, they're, you know, there's well-established competence-based learning things. I know some folk are saying not another competency framework at the moment, but you know, that's just the way we're going, and that's the reality of the new world that pharmacists, especially in general practice, live in. And also another thing that is interesting is the GP trainers that I've encountered are all actually practicing themselves. I'm not really sure how acceptable or how appropriate it is for pharmacist trainers, in inverted commas, to be non-practicing, and also to sort of train remotely. I mean, do you not have to sort of observe what the pharmacists you're training are doing? You know, what the way I see my interpretation of the pharmacotherapy services coming in is that it seems to be a very centrally sort of organized thing, and pharmacists and pharmacy technicians seem to be, parachute is probably an unfair word, but they're drafted in and they're managed remotely. I find that a different model to what exists at the moment, but maybe I'm just being naive. Don't know if you've any thoughts on that.
I think it's something that will probably develop over time. I think the reality is that you will have a number of people that are experienced working as prescribers within a GP practice setting. Not necessarily done the GP clinical pharmacist role, but have enough experience within that to be able to support and share. But I don't think the numbers of people that are experienced in that are sufficient to support the numbers that are coming through this sort of constant recruitment that we have. And I'm sure it will come, but I would not want to be one of the pharmacists at the minute who's out there, with limited access to somebody that can support. The reality is in the practices, and it's always been that way in any practices that I've worked in, there's always been a wee bit of uncertainty about what is it you do? What do you need from us? And that's a difficult thing because we have this new role, which is different to what we were doing before in GP practice. But there'll be expectation that things that they operate in the same way as you did before. Or there are several pharmacists that I've spoken with who are very new to the setting, but coming in behind a pharmacist who has been very experienced. And the expectation from the practice is that they will operate at the level that the previous pharmacist did, which isn't right and isn't fair. And it's how do we get those people to the point where they need to be? Much of that is time, but the right support and the right training is really important. And the right networks are really important as well, which is where I think the boot camps are really positive. The NEST boot camps are really positive because there's a lot of, oh, that's happening with you, that's me too. People don't feel quite so isolated, perhaps. And I know the boards do have support mechanisms, and they do have structures in place to support the pharmacists. But I guess a lot of what, considering you've got so many new pharmacists coming into these roles, that there just aren't enough experienced pharmacists to support them. And that's the challenge, I think. And I don't know what the answer to that is.
No, I think it's probably just time and doing it. I don't want to sort of, you know, I'm really cautious of doing these podcasts and sort of coming across as really negative. That's not the case. I'm
No, I mean, I think
like one of the most positive folk out there, you know, but I think we need to
it's
just be a bit realistic.
yeah, I think that's it. I mean, and I really think these ways. I mean, I think having pharmacists working in GP practices is phenomenal. I think they bring a, and technicians as well. I think they bring a whole different skill set, a whole different set of eyes to things, with a different experience behind it. And I think a lot of the pharmacists I've spoken to maybe don't feel that what they bring is valued. It's almost like they're too busy focused on what they don't have yet. And it's so we need to look at, okay, well, what can you do well? Give pharmacists that opportunity to do the stuff that they can do well, to build their confidence in that setting and to build that kind of those positive relationships within the practice, all the while though driving it forward, like what next, how are we going to get upskill you, how are we going to get you up to your competence level? And I think the experience that people have spoken to me about is it's broad, it's varied. I would say that the pharmacists that are probably doing best are the ones that are driving it forward themselves. And I think you have to do that mm-hmm. when you're working in that environment and operating at that level. You have to be pushing it forward. You have to be identifying, okay, I'm not able to do this. How do I get there? Speak to the GPs. And I know that, you know, in some GP practices, the GPs are so available or even the practice manager is so available, and in others it's not so much. And you have to create those opportunities for yourself. So it isn't just about having the structures in place, you know, from a board level, but I do think there has to be somewhere for them to go, because there's still definitely an us and them, you know. And until pharmacists are truly, really integrated within to practices and that's just the norm, we absolutely have to have those structures within the board where people can go to, where they've got a regular contact and folk checking in, making sure how's this going. Because it's a big change for so many people.
Huge.
And getting that feedback is so important.
So that was very interesting. Tell me, let's go on to your business. Tell us all about your business. What do you do, and how do we buy your services today?
well, as ever, keeping it interesting, I have a few irons in the fire, as my mother would say. So the main part of my week is working on my business Owen Care, which is for care homes, care at home services, extra care services, and I do a lot of training with services. I do consultancy within services. I'm off to Birmingham tomorrow to do some site visits and a rewrite of a medication policy and create some SOPs for a company in England, an extra care company, and I've also got online. I've developed kind of online medication training videos, because my clients were very much, you know, I would turn up to do training and they would send two or three people to the training, and the practicalities of that for them, it's, you know, it wasn't great for them and it wasn't great for me because I didn't feel like I was doing a very good job. So now I have training videos online that my clients now buy that instead of having me jetting in for poorly attended training sessions, which is great. It's been a huge learning curve for me developing that stuff, but that's all good. And generally what happens is with my business is it kind of evolves based on demand. So I work in partnership with a good old friend and colleague from NHS Lanarkshire Days as well, Trish McGlynn, who has her own consultancy company for care services. We do a lot of work together, and we're now doing leadership training with care services. The reality for both of us is that we've had so much experience in and training in terms of coaching and leadership over the years of our careers within the NHS that we're using a lot of that within our consultancy services, and then being asked to actually do some training with managers and management teams within services. So we're doing leadership training on tour around Scotland next year, and marketing to care services. But the reality of this is it's leadership skills that are applicable in any setting. So that's really interesting. And kind of off the back of that as well, and some work that I was doing with some pharmacists, some professionals, just on actually kind of coaching through some issues that they were having. I'm starting my own coaching business, which I'm going to launch in January, because actually I've identified there is such a big need out there. So, and on the back of that, I'm also doing my coaching accreditation now, because I've done huge amounts of training over the years and used coaching throughout my career, you know, with my teams, with staff, with colleagues, with others. So I'm kind of formalising that training, getting that accreditation so that I can, although I'm currently not learning anything new, which is great for me because I'm like, okay, I knew what I was doing already. But getting the accreditation, I think, is important for me, I guess, part of that is a pharmacist thing, isn't it, to be able to see. I've got the certificate.
Oh,
I know what I'm
definitely.
doing.
Oh, we're risk averse. We're just, oh, definitely. Definitely need a bit of
Be able to show
paper.
that bit of paper and see what you're doing. So and that's really interesting and exciting and yeah, so it's so yeah,
Well,
life is busy and fun and interesting.
good, good. I mean, I was just going to say, I don't think you'll be, I think you're positioning yourself in the coaching market is very, very astute, because I think with so much change, not just in GP practice, but you know, there's such seismic shifts in the employment market and pharmacy across the UK at the moment. Folk are going to need support, aren't they? And direction, and as they go on that journey along the Dunning-Kruger curve, you know, and they hit rock bottom and think, God, I can't do this, I can't do this, and then they'll phone you and you'll be like, yeah, you can.
I think that the thing about the coaching stuff is like it all comes from within. So all I'm doing as a coach is really asking the right questions to get you to find your way through it yourself, and that's the empowering bit for people is actually, discovering like, oh, I did know how to do that, or I do have that in me, and I can see my way through with that. And that's and it's always been for me as a manager or whatever stage. I mean, I started doing coaching when I was working for Boots 20 years ago. It's and from it, and I've seen the benefits of it, and I've always used it within whatever service I'm working in, because I see how valuable it is. Because when actually people are coming up with those solutions themselves or finding the best way through it themselves, it works a lot better. Everything works better. So whether you are using it in a kind of operational sense or actually using it to help other people find their path through, and for me, it's I guess I do miss the patient-facing role that I had, when I was working in the GP practices with care homes. But it's kind of filled that gap for me, because it's that face-to-face contact with somebody. It's really kind of getting to the root of what your client really wants, really needs. It's the same stuff. I have to laugh in some of my accreditation, the sessions that I'm doing, people will say that, oh, you're very good at the questions and listening, and it's all consultation skills. It's not anything I didn't stuff I learned on the next consultation skills training day. But it's yeah, anyway, so it's helping people kind of find their way through that and seeing them come out the other end of that in a much more positive way. It's the same stuff as doing a good polypharmacy review. It's the same, yeah, I made a difference for that person. It's a really positive experience for me too, for me as well as that person. So I'm enjoying that, and it's an exciting new challenge for me, definitely.
Good stuff. One final question. Now, I'm not saying you're old, because we're about the same age, about 30. So yeah,
Yeah, we
stuck.
are.
One question I ask, well, that's kind of like a stock question, a trademark question, shall we say, for pharmacists that have been on the register for a few years, let's say more than five. What's your advice for pharmacists joining the register? Or pharmacy technicians, actually.
I think, oh, that's oh. You should have prepped me on this one. I guess what I've learned over the years, because I think I spent a lot of time thinking I didn't want to be a pharmacist, because I
That's
thought I had quite a
interesting.
closed idea of what that was. And the reality is that everything I have done over my career is because I'm a pharmacist. The skills I've learned, the transferable skills I've gained. So I have recently spoken to younger pharmacists who are feeling a bit dissatisfied, a bit uncertain, and what I would say to them is broaden the scope of what you're looking at. Don't feel that there's anything that you can't do because you haven't done it yet. I threw myself into all sorts of different things. I've had fantastic managers and fantastic mentors over the years who have, given me a dunt when the imposter syndrome kicks in. Like, oh no, I couldn't do that. I'm only in this job because somebody hasn't found me out yet. And take those opportunities when they present themselves. Because the reality is, if you don't, someone else will, and then you'll be kicking yourself for somebody that you think isn't as good as you got that job or did that thing. Or so get as much experience doing as many different things as you can until you find a thing that really is for you. I love what I'm doing now, and in terms of my the own care work, I couldn't do that if I wasn't a pharmacist. This isn't just about I'm now out running a business. Yeah, again, all the extra skills of being able to run a business now. But at the core of it, people are buying my knowledge and experience as a pharmacist. So it's just about finding what works for you within it. Pharmacy is so broad. There are so many different things that you can do. And I think I've done pretty much everything except industry over the course of my career, and learned from all of those things. So I think it's don't be afraid to put yourself out there and do different things. I used to worry that my CV looked really scrappy. I used to worry that I'd done things and I didn't, I spent 6 months in that job, but it wasn't for me, and I moved on. And the reality is, if you are jumping about because you're flighty, that's one thing. If you're moving around because you think, nope, that's not for me, what is the right thing? What is the next step I can take? How can I move forward with that? You will find something that really fulfills you, and that is a really positive experience for you as well as for your patients, for your clients, whatever it is. So yeah, try lots of things.
I
Don't
think
stagnate.
that's brilliant advice. Like I know you should be cautious and don't be flighty, as you say, but there's a difference between that and following demand. And at the end of the day, pharmacists are we have to meet patient demand as well, and we have to put ourselves clinically in positions where there's a clinical return. And I suppose if you can manage to get a commercial return there as well, then all the better. But I think being a pharmacist does make a difference. I think that's great advice. And also that what you're saying there, what I'm hearing from what you're saying is quite reflective of your experience, quite liberating advice. Just don't be reckless, but do go for it, So
Yeah,
that's very much
definitely.
good
I think
advice.
there's a lot of things that I mean, and I wouldn't say I have regrets about things, but there are things that I didn't go for and thought, oh, I should have done that. And you learn as you go, but I think it's trying to develop that confidence and mindset earlier on that really putting yourself out there. The very worst that happens is you get a learning experience from it and move on to the next thing. I definitely in the past have been scared to fail at things. And now, it's a bit like when we moved abroad. It was like, are you scared? Yeah, well, a little bit, but actually, I'm more scared not to do it and regret it in a few years' time. And I look back at my career and I think, yeah, there's the way I sort of shaped my career was just throwing myself into things that didn't necessarily feel comfortable at the time, or I didn't necessarily feel equipped to do it at the time. But knowing within that you have that basic skill set and you can build and you can learn, and not being afraid to try different things is, and you won't always find that your thing works. I did lots of things that I didn't like, and you learn from that too. That's like, okay, I don't want to do
Absolutely.
that again. I'll do something different. So, but
It's
not to
been yeah.
be afraid.
It's been really lovely speaking to you, Francesca, and
Thank you.
I wish you all the best with everything. And yeah, I'm ever hopeful for the invitation to Andorra. I think
Anytime,
well
anytime.
I'm looking for I'm looking for venues for our inaugural editorial board meetings. So I think your house could be top of the list, to be honest.
If people can handle the journey, a lot of people say to me, oh, it's so far that you travel. I'm like, don't even want to do
I'd
that.
manage.
You get so used to it. It just becomes the commute. But excellent. No, it's been
No,
great.
good
Thank you so
stuff.
much for having me. It's been really good
Likewise.
talking
No,
to
it's
you.
it's a pleasure. I always feel more positive and feel just all around better after speaking to you. So, yeah, it's great. So, and all the best with all the best for your business. And I'll see you soon, okay?
Thanks very much, Johnny. Take care.
See you. See you. Bye.
Bye.